How long have you been dancing, and I guess why you started to begin with?
So I started dancing, like, I guess I was in maybe grade 7. It was like Ukrainian dancing because one of the teachers at the elementary school taught that. And then through Ukrainian dancing, which I liked because the guys got to go to the ground and do some tricks, which is fun. But I went to the end of year festival at the university and I saw breakdancing for the first time. So then all my teenage years is just breaking, 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 breaking. I loved it. And then I had a hip surgery in 2011 when I was, I don't know, like 20, 22, 23. And after that, I just couldn't break anymore. I just didn't feel the stability. And when we were breaking, we broke to like a lot of Latin funk music because if for the viewers who don't know, a lot of the Puerto Ricans immigrated to New York. So at the same time, salsa was happening. Hip hop culture was also being born in New York. So it was a very rich time culturally. And so they brought their music. And so that was a really big part of hip hop is Latin music. And so I was like, oh, one day I want to learn how to salsa dance. So that day came eventually. I graduated university and found out my university had a Cuban salsa club. So I started actually learning with Rueda de Casino, like, I don't know, I want to say like 10 years ago. And then from there, it's really slow because I'm from a city there is basically no salsa. And it was just students who didn't really know how to dance Rueda teaching other students how to dance Rueda. And then I moved to Vancouver, Canada. And that's when I met Patrick and Scarlett, who are now teachers at the Dance Dojo that teach the online salsa program. So they were my first, let's say, most significant teachers. And that's where I really got my foundations from them in like 2012, 2013.
Okay, so that's solid 10 years of salsa at least, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to say it was solid, but it was a few years, I guess, of solid practice with them. And then I actually left Vancouver and then I wasn't dancing for a while, injuries, various things like that, life. I moved to Colombia and then it was kind of on and off dancing due to travel, due to whatever. And then my hip got really bad again in 2020. And it's like the last 3 years have not been very much dancing at all. I managed to do some physio and get a little bit stronger and kind of get back to it, but I really haven't trained steadily at all. Which is unfortunate because I would love to. So hopefully soon I'll really get back to it consistently.
Now, as far as that's super interesting, man. As far as Dance Dojo, that's your company, right?
Yeah.
How did like talk about that? When did you start it, and you know how? I mean, I have other questions, but how did it all start with Dance Dojo?
Yeah, sure. So when I moved to Vancouver and I decided I really wanted to get better at salsa and I met Patrick and Scarlett, I was just really wowed by how good they were as teachers. Because throughout my whole life, I've been an athlete, I've done many different sports. I was a competitive springboard platform diver, and then I also trained kids how to do it themselves, became a breakdancer competitively, also taught people how to do that. So I've always loved the teaching aspect, but then also being a student. So right away I recognized with them, I was like, wow, they're not just good dancers, like they're good teachers. And that stood out to me. And so I thought, I mean, at the same time, I was thinking, huh, I don't want to have a boss for the rest of my life. I want to kind of create some sort of life of freedom. So I had studied business at school and I wanted to create some sort of business that would allow me to spend my time how I want and be more free. And at that time, I was doing classes with them in this big ballroom with Patrick and Scarlett, and they were teaching like 40 people, I guess, in that ballroom. And I was thinking, man, these teachers are so good. It is an injustice that they're only teaching 40 people at a time. It's like they should be teaching everyone and anyone in the world. So unfortunately, a lot of creatives, a lot of artists, they don't really have that business side developed because they're so focused on their art, which is understandable. You can't learn everything at once. And so I was just taking kind of what I had learned from the business and internet and marketing world. And it was just like, my life is dance. How do I combine these two? So I kind of pitched them. I said, hey guys, like, I think you should be teaching everyone and I could start helping you do that. Like, do you want to try and make this happen? So they said yes. And in 2014, it was April, Dance Dojo launched. We had our salsa course. It was not as complete as it is right now, but it was the beginnings of it. And we got our first customer on that day. And yeah, so it's almost been, we're coming up on 10 years next year. So it's been a while.
Man, that's so awesome, man. Congrats on that.
Thanks. I guess the other thing I wanted to mention there is why did I start it really is because kind of like you, you're sharing your journey, your salsa journey. And I was like, man, in between classes, I wish I had something to help me get better. Because at this point, like YouTube really hadn't exploded yet. There really weren't any online courses. And so I was like, what can I do in between class to get better? Because like, you can't just call Patrick and Scott and be like, tell me what to do. That's what a private class is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, oh, I want to create this tool that doesn't exist yet that I really wish I had. I think at this point, Baila Society might have had some online lessons, and it was like a really, really old website. So I'm like, okay, well, we can do better. So let's try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you remember seeing Addicted to Salsa videos?
Yeah. I mean, I think he did so well because he really dove in there at the beginning of YouTube, and he had like millions of views on some of those videos.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah. But the concept, so the concept of your videos is similar, right? As far as instruction and the breakdown of all the different moves. Is it similar, or is it has some other features that his videos don't have?
Well, I guess most people get introduced to Dance Dojo probably through YouTube. And on YouTube, I'd say it's just like the super tip of the iceberg. It's just me making an effort to try and talk about some things that people don't typically hear in class, putting out some of my own experiences, and just experimenting overall to see what people like to watch. But in the course itself, what I think is so different is I don't think I've ever seen another online course that is so in-depth and comprehensive. So we have partner work, we have shines, we have musicality, we have lead and follow technique for partner work, we've got turn technique, we've got how to find the beat, like all of these things in one. And adding on top of that, Patrick and Scarlett as teachers, the depth of the explanations is really, really special. And I think that's what sets us apart, is the fact that there's like 3 to 5 years of salsa knowledge that you could just dive into there and continually improve. As opposed to, I don't know, maybe something that's a bit more surface level or a bit more focused. It's quite comprehensive.
Yeah, the curriculum is pretty cool. I saw on the website that you have all these different categories available for people to dive into. So kudos for creating that and developing that. I was wondering about, you know, also you're obviously a content creator now. So you became a content creator because of the need to support the business appropriately, or were you a content creator prior to Dance Dojo?
Yeah, good question. So at the start of Dance Dojo, like I would not call myself a content creator at all. I started just posting demo videos of the lessons on YouTube. And of course that was not very engaging because it was just like a 30-second clip. Anybody can make that. And then I think it was just before COVID, I started making my own YouTube videos because as I was developing as a business owner, I realized, hey, I have to put my face out there if I really want this to grow. Because at that point, most people thought Dance Dojo was Patrick and Scarlett's business, which is fine, but Patrick and Scarlett don't have the time to grow it. They made the lessons and they have their own projects, their own studio, and that's it. So it was up to me if I wanted to grow it. So I started putting my face out there and I started talking about different topics about salsa along my journey. And I started with a series of videos called Finding the Beat, because I really discovered that that's every beginner's biggest challenge by far. And almost nobody talks about it in class, which kind of blows my mind, but it's also kind of a hard topic to attack. So I understand why a lot of teachers avoid it, because it's not easy to figure out and to teach. So that's just kind of how I got into doing YouTube, was kind of out of necessity in terms of like, hey, do I want this Dance Dojo project to grow? Do I want more people to be able to discover it? And if so, I have to get over my fear of putting my face out there. So it was a bit of a process, but maybe like yourself, I'm curious if you found the same thing. You know, maybe you'd like write a little script, you'd start filming yourself, and you'd get it wrong like 10 times in a row, and you'd start swearing. You're like, you know what? I don't care anymore. I'm not even afraid of putting my face out there. I don't want to finish this video, and that's it. And so you get over that fear pretty quick, actually, which is great.
Yeah, it's definitely part of a process. It's trial and error, you know?
Yes.
And at this point for me, I just end up documenting as much as I can. So I go to practice, I film, and I put it up. And now I recently actually found myself kind of like overthinking it a little bit, maybe, or trying to come up with some original ideas. And so, and then I noticed it's kind of like slows me down a little bit. So now I have to like retrack my steps and like just continue to document, you know? And then, you know, I think sometimes it's good to see engagement. And when you witness that your video created a lot of engagement, you want to be able to replicate that. You want to be able to deliver value. And because obviously, if people watching and people sharing, that means they're getting something out of the video. So then, you know, as a content creator, I think it's only natural to be able to or wanting to recreate a similar product and deliver value. And so, but sometimes I think with that comes challenges of overthinking and trying to fit the pieces, thinking how to make sure that people are going to watch it, but there's no way to know whether people are going to watch it. So I think, like, for me, it's how do I document my journey and then, you know, give the value in the best way that I can. And then the rest of it, I have to kind of step away and let the magic of internet happen. And I don't know if you have a lot of control over that, you
Yeah.
know?
I mean, I think it's like you said, that it's a bit of a balance. You don't want to get overly in your head about it because you never know it's going to work a lot of the time. And that's kind of like equivalent with the salsa journey. And sometimes it's just you're learning by trial and error. You don't know what's going to work all the time, unless, of course, you have a mentor that's helping you on that path. But so, for example, I was trying a lot of videos and I was writing scripts and doing a lot of editing. And then one day I just set up the camera and did, I think it was the video, like seven inside turn variations. I filmed that in 3 minutes with my friend and it just blew up. And I'm like, man, like that was so easy to make. Like I put like no effort into it. I'm not saying it's not a good video, but it just like, it didn't take any effort to make. And it was like, by far, it got hundreds of thousands of views. And it's like, oh my God. So you learn something by trial and error, right? Like some things work, some things don't. People really like certain topics or certain styles of videos, and you just have to experiment to find that thing. And unfortunately, it doesn't mean you can repeat it again and again and again,
Exactly.
but hey.
Exactly. No, it's interesting that you say that because that's sort of a testament to my beliefs. And funny enough, it's a similar conversation, a similar topic of a conversation that I've had with my friend who kind of been going back and forth, you know, regarding starting a channel. And then I tell him like, hey, you know, you can't overthink it. You can't be perfect in the beginning. It's more about content than the quality of production, especially in the beginning, you know,
Yeah,
it's like getting
volume.
started, you know. And so
Yeah.
yeah, it's funny that you say that 3 minute video ended up being so popular.
Yeah, and I think that goes for a lot of things. Like I've had a lot of injuries over the years, so I could make the parallel to doing physiotherapy or even, you know, practicing salsa or any dance style is like maybe you don't quite have the awareness of your body when the physiotherapist gives you an exercise to do that's supposed to help you. But by doing it 50 times, 100 times, and then 1,000 times, eventually you really start to understand what that movement should feel like, shouldn't feel like, feels like for me now, how it starts to feel as I'm getting better at it. And I think that happens in your dancing as well. So at the beginning, putting too much emphasis on trying to be perfect is not very helpful. It's just like get the reps in. As long as you're being intentional not to just be sloppy, you know, you are trying to do a good job, but you're not putting too much pressure on yourself for that to be perfect because your body just needs to start understanding what that movement is. And once it can start understanding what that movement is, slowly you can start like turn on your editor and be like, okay, let's tweak this a bit, let's tweak this a bit, let's tweak this a bit. But before you get to that point, before you get the reps in, your brain doesn't have a good enough mental understanding of what you're doing to pick it apart and criticize it. So I think it's important just to get that volume in.
So it's funny that you mentioned it because I was thinking about, you know, repetitions versus ability to pick up knowledge. Literally in the last 24 hours, that thought crossed my mind. I was watching a video by Fernando Sosa, and you know, he was dancing with his partner, and he just did, I think he was in one of the workshops, but he did his routine, and then at the end he spun. So like he did like three or four spins, like in within the three counts, and then he just landed on beat like clean, you know, and fast. And I was wondering to myself, okay, so how does it work with most people? Because obviously repetition is one of the most important things, I believe. And it's also any other discipline, right? If you like to your point, if you going to do enough repetitions, then you should be able to eventually master a move, a skill, something that you're trying to acquire. Mm-hmm. But then I was wondering, you know, is it all about repetition, or is there a way to learn something quickly, or is it a matter of talent? What do you experience with that? Like, what do you believe in that regard?
Well, I'll speak using a reference of people that are much smarter than me who have studied this stuff, because I think all physical skills follow the same path or follow the same principles. So there's a book called Peak. I think it's like Peak, the Science of, I can't remember. But anyways, so this is where this stuff is coming from that I'm about to say. And so you can get somewhere by sheer repetition, trial and error, and banging your head against the wall. Sure, maybe it'll take you 10 years. But if you do the gold standard of practice, which is what they call it, and model a master. So you model a master, let's say, hey, I want to learn salsa. I'm going to learn from Patrick and Scarlett, because they already have the results that mm-hmm. I want to have. Mm-hmm. And so they have, I mean, not everyone has this. So you want to find a master who has the results you want to have, and then also a mentor that has a process to repeat those results in their students, and that it's proven to get results. And so when you find a mentor that has that and you have the system to follow, you're going to squash the amount of time it takes to reach your goal so much faster. And that's kind of the approach we take to creating these online programs. It's like, hey, you can do it yourself. You can learn anything you want on YouTube. You can learn about business. You can learn about juggling, whatever. But you could do it a lot faster without all the pain if you follow this teacher and you follow this process, which has been shown to work. So I think that answers your question.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. You have a playbook and you just end up following it religiously, consistently, and diligently. Yeah.
And the other thing that I realized is that, like, as someone who just does a lot of things on my own and is pretty, I guess, like, independent or self-motivated, it's really nice when you have a coach just telling you what to do, you know, yeah. whether that's going to the gym and you have a personal trainer or yeah. you have the salsa coach or whatever. If you're someone that is always trying to make decisions on your own, and then, you know, you've paid someone to just yell at you and tell you what to do, it is amazing. You just get to relax and do the work instead of just overloading your brain. So I think there's a lot of value in coaches, in mentors that have the results that you want to get.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Common challenges. What they've been for you throughout your dancing journey?
Well, I guess funny enough, like going back to like finding the beat, I had danced for some years, but then when I started dancing salsa, I couldn't really find the one in salsa music, because salsa music is actually a lot more complicated than your average rock song, pop song, hip hop song, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the first challenge that any dancer in this genre is going to feel. And then speaking to the leads, because I have the most experience as a lead, it's going to be just like coordinating your body, because one, you have to think about like, what am I doing myself? And then you, on top of that, you have to start taking care of a partner. So all the leads know what I'm talking about there. So at the beginning, I think it's much harder for the leads. They're thinking about their feet, what to do with their hands, how do I not piss off my partner or embarrass myself? And so at the beginning, I think it's a bit easier for follows. But then it kind of switches around. It's like once we've popped up that learning curve and we're kind of getting the basics down, then we're getting all excited and like, oh, we want to start turning our partners. And it's the follows that have been chilling up until this point. And then all of a sudden you start giving them turns and they have no idea how to keep their balance, how to walk on a line straight without falling over. And then actually one thing that we're adding to Dance Dojo right now is lady styling. And as Scarlett was filming it and we're talking about it, she's like, yeah, now this is what the ladies are going to start feeling, what the guys felt when they started dancing, because they're worrying about their feet and then they had to worry about their hands at the same time for lady styling. So it kind of comes back around later for the follows, I think. But at the beginning for the leads, it's definitely just like coordinating your body, trying to remember moves, trying to just get over that hump psychologically to not quit, I think, because that's hard for a lot of people. And then a lot of people also have that social anxiety of like asking people to dance because they're like, oh, I'm terrible. Why would anybody want to dance with me? And it's funny because you can get over that in salsa and then start bachata or zouk or some other dance and then you feel that all over again. So it's not like you're immune to that.
Man, you just touched on a lot of things. And I kind of would like to extract some of the other points from what you said. So one of the things is coordinating movement. And I think you mentioned that there's a partner work and then there's a just individual work, individual movement. So as far as becoming better at individual movement, what do you think the best way to do that?
I mean, so one, you need to know how to get better at individual movement. Like, what is it that I actually need to do? So that's where the coach comes in. Because for example, when I was learning how to break dance, I came from a town that just didn't have any mentors. And so what took me 10 years to learn took a lot of people who are like, I don't know, let's say from Miami, Florida, who had all these great breakers around them, maybe 1 or 2 years to learn. So surrounding yourself with people who are already way past you or who can give you that insight is number one. So if you don't already have good teachers around you, I would say like find an online program. That's why the internet is amazing, is because you don't need to live with Fernando Sosa. Like you can take his online program or whoever is your hero or your the person that you look up to and want to dance similar to, is find the knowledge and so then just follow that path. So for example, let's say we log on to Dance Dojo, you go to the body movement module and it's going to explain, here's the stance you need to take, here's how to move your torso. Everything comes from the ground, so you need to bend your knees, you need to push through the ground to have grounded movements. Because if you're just moving your arms and your movement's not coming from your steps or from your weight shifts, it's gonna look really awkward and unnatural. So if nobody ever told you that before, you'd probably be thinking as a guy, oh, I just have to wiggle my arms and I'm gonna be masculine and I'm gonna look like I know what I'm doing. It's like, well, no, everything's a consequence of how you step and how you shift your weight. So that's why it's so important to get good information early so that you skip all those bad habits from forming. And so let's say, okay, number one, you solve the problem. I've got good information, or I've got a course to follow. I've got a teacher that can help me. And the number two is get putting in those reps, not just doing it in class, being at home. If you have a mirror, use a mirror. If you don't have a mirror, turn on the camera that we're using right now, because you need to get feedback and you want to use it every single time you practice. So you can practice it without the mirror or without the camera, get a bunch of reps in, but then be like, okay, I'm going to compare myself to what it should look like, your mentor, your master, whatever. You say, okay, well, what's different? What's the missing piece? And you can go back to their explanation and they're saying, oh, you need to do this. Ah, I wasn't quite doing that. Repeat, repeat, repeat until it slowly start closing that gap, because we've all felt this. You're like, oh, I feel amazing. You film yourself. Okay. You just want to like shoot yourself in the head because you're so embarrassed. Like you're like, man, I look terrible. My posture's hunched over. And you're like, I never want to film myself again. But by having that awareness of what you actually look like, it gives you a dose of reality and it gives you something to work with, because now you can work at changing that. So you can finally close the gap of what feels good and doesn't look good. Eventually we'll start feeling good and looking good. And it becomes the same thing. But that comes through the repetition, having good information, and then getting the feedback. So if you don't have the instructor there giving you private feedback, which most people can't afford, use a mirror, use a camera, and then you learn how to self-critique. It's a very slow process, but something like that.
Yeah, no, I definitely second that. The ability to see yourself on camera is critical, because everything is there. You know, you don't have to guess. You can see visually what's working well and what's not working well. And then you can develop a plan. And then sometimes, you know, I think it's about details, right? I think it's about also correcting one thing at the time and making it manageable versus, you know, trying to correct five things. So in fitness, I used to be in fitness and I used to be, you know, doing a lot of, well, as a trainer, as a group fitness instructor, and one of the things that you learn in fitness is that whenever you give feedback, you provide one progression at a time. And that does not overwhelm, you know, the ability of any participant to incorporate that that suggestion.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. I think anyone who has had any level of success in the field they're tackling is going to agree with you. Because, I mean, as humans, you just get so overwhelmed when you have too much information and you can only really correct one thing at a time. And without that focus, Yeah, you're just gonna feel like, one, you're not making any progress because you're trying to make progress three things at once. And unless you're making progress on all those three things at once, you're gonna label yourself as a failure, which is not very healthy and not very helpful. So if you're just tackling one thing, you're super focused, there's a much higher chance that you're gonna start incrementally improving that, label yourself as success, and then influence that positive feedback loop to keep going. So 100%.
It's like chasing three rabbits otherwise, you know.
That
Or three
definitely sounds
chick
impossible.
or three chickens at the same time. You mentioned social anxiety. So as far as that goes, what are your thoughts on overcoming that? Because I actually had that. So I 100% relate. And there were times when I would come to socials, I would sit there, I would watch other people dance, then I would leave and I would have And I would feel a certain type of way on my ride back
I know, I know. Yeah, I mean, I'd be just as curious to hear about your experience because I think we all have it experience it a little bit of a different way. I think one, the first thing is like expect it. It's normal, it's natural. If you're a beginner, I mean, some beginners don't feel this, but I think they're the exception to the rule. I think most beginners are going to feel self-conscious. That's the word I was looking for. And so when you go to the party and everyone you see, you're just like, oh my God, they're so much better than me. And as a beginner, you can't really tell who's a beginner and who's advanced. Everyone looks like they're, Terry or Bercy or like the best dancer in the world. And it's funny because I've met a lot of beginners and you go to the party and they're like, oh my God, that person's so good. And I'm looking at them and I'm like, I can tell. It's like that person's actually a beginner. But like everyone is just like, oh my God. So you're just so overstimulated by how insufficient you are that just realize that like everyone's there to have fun. You're at the beginning of your journey, so you're not expected to be amazing. There are going to be some people out there that are not very welcoming to newcomers and are not very friendly, but most people are. So if you have a negative experience, don't chalk that up to being your fault necessarily. And so I think it just takes a bit of courage, a bit of strength at the beginning, and maybe kind of like what you said, focus on one thing. So like just bite a little bit off at one time. Be like, I'm going to go ask someone I don't know tonight to dance, especially as a lead. I mean, follows can do this as well, but the leads usually definitely have to ask. What helps even more is if you have a friend. Can I go up? Can I arrive to the party with a friend? Can I warm up and dance with my friend? Just so you feel a bit more comfortable. You've got a friend around. You can, something bad happens, you can talk about it. You're not alone, right? And if you have people from class, you can go to socials with people from class. So just having those familiar faces around, you can warm up with those people before you dance with strangers. Really helped me a lot at the beginning. And then I guess once I started getting comfortable just asking strangers, I think it's important to remember that you're going to have good nights and bad nights. So, and I felt this with my Spanish as well, because I've lived in Latin America for a few years now, is you're going to feel on your journey like you're getting better. And then you're going to feel like, oh shit, I just got worse. Like, what changed? Like, you have a good night, you have some good dances. And then you dance with someone new and you just have a terrible experience and you don't know why. And this happens to all of us. Trust me, this happens to your favorite instructors. It happens to the pros. I'm sure it's happened to you. And this is really confusing mentally because you just think everything's going to be like this, but it's not, unfortunately. And so there'll be good nights and there'll be bad nights. And I think you mentioned this. It's like when you have one of those bad nights and you're going home and beating yourself up mentally about it, I think you just have to remind yourself, it's like, you know what? It just wasn't my night. Or I went to the social and I just felt really anxious, like, oh man, like these people are like a higher level than I was expecting. So I'm feeling a bit more intimidated than usual. Don't beat yourself up about it. Just be like, okay, I'm feeling intimidated right now. And you can either turn that around and be like, well, I'm going to feel intimidated and go dance with someone, or I'm going to be intimidated and sit here and not dance. Either way, don't beat yourself up about that. Just acknowledge how you feel and then decide what you want to do about it. Because I've even gone out after I've had a bunch of positive experience and lots of years salsa dancing, and I'm just sat there and be like, you know what? I'm not really feeling it tonight. And I've also heard that from lots of instructors. You're an emotional human being, and sometimes you might be into it, you might not be into it, and that's going to affect whether you have good or bad dances and your interactions with people. So I think just be like compassionate with yourself, bite a little bit off at a time, time and set those mini goals. Like, I'm going to ask two new people to dance. I'm going to ask five new people. And eventually it becomes a habit, it becomes easier. I'm curious how it's been for you.
Yeah, I think it's such a fascinating topic because there's just so much that you can think about and that you can discuss within that topic. For me, that's been probably, I would say, a month or so, or maybe even month and a half period where I went to socials, but I did very little dancing for that very reason, just because it was a mental block. I just could never overcome it. It's like I go take classes, I feel like, okay, I have some moves. I have my, and that's another thing too, a little side note. I think what really helps is the fact that you can feel comfortable within your little bubble. So let's say your little bubble is five moves, right? Let's say it's just cross body lead, right turn, Coca-Cola turn, hammer lock, and maybe one or two other things, right? And let's say that you're confident in those things because you practice them. You practice them extensively, you had enough reps. I think you can build on that. I think you can take those things and don't, try to do anything crazy. Just stick with the script, stick with things that you know. So that's number one that I think kind of helped me because after this 1 month or month and a half that I was telling you about of not dancing at socials, then I've got to the point where I was at Orlando Salsa Congress and, many great dancers, and it's just amazing vibes, great music. Just it was the time, and I told myself, if I'm not going to do it now, I'm never going to do it. So I forced myself. It was sort of, it was in a way painful experience, you can say. Not like, literally, but like overcoming something that I couldn't overcome before. But one thing that really helped, I would actually break the ice, so to speak. So I would ask somebody to dance and I would tell them, I only have five moves, so don't expect much, and they laugh, and like you see somebody else laugh and that kind of puts you at ease, right?
Yeah, it's
And
a
then,
great way to do it.
yeah, and then at that point, well, I just told her not to expect much. So if she expects much, that's not on me. I can mess up. I give myself permission to F up and it's fine because I warned her. And then most dancers actually were pleasant, right? And that's the thing too. I realized it's not so much about moves, it's about creating connection on a dance floor. And connection on the dance floor can come in different forms. It can come from being goofy on the dance floor, it can come being attentive on the dance floor, it could come from being musical on the dance floor, really expressing yourself with the music. So there are a number of different ways in which human beings can connect on the dance floor. And so saying those funny things to people really helped mentally. And then a couple of them said, like, oh, that was more than five moves. And I was like, was it? Right? So then, you end up in some instances, you end up in a situation where, man, it's actually worked out better than I thought it would. But to sum it all up, I think having confidence in moves that you do know, so perfecting this, or not perfecting, at least making it as good as you possibly can, few moves that you can count on for yourself. In other words, I think if you're going to go out on the dance floor just winging it completely, not knowing what you're doing, I don't think it's a good thing either. I don't think it helps nobody. So having that baseline that you can hang your head on, and then doing those things, sticking to the script. And then I think a lot of it is showcasing your essence, personality on the dance floor, because that's one thing that I don't think is being talked and discussed enough. This is so much of it is about a mysterious connection in a way. A mysterious connection comes from authenticity, right? If I'm authentically connecting with another person on the dance floor, and we have something, there's something going on in that moment that's really hard to explain. And I don't think it's contingent upon moves. I think it's part of it, but I think it's only a little part of the story. So being able to express yourself in that moment and I like to say leave your essence on the dance floor. What is your essence? What is
Absolutely.
you? What makes you who you are? How are you going to express that on the dance floor? I think, and it's sometimes it's hard to do. But I think if you're able to do that, the experience changes somehow.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I love that you're talking about connection because a lot of classes just focus on moves. And it's a lot of what beginners just want to focus on. It's like, I need more moves, I need more moves. And then eventually figure out that that is just an empty cycle and doesn't really become fulfilling. And so I wanted to touch on like your essence of the energy. So for example, a lot of like new salsa dancers will write me and say like, ah, oh, like I just want to have enough moves to get through a dance so she doesn't roll her eyes at me. Or every time I go out there, like I just forget all the moves I know and just like I blank out and I start sweating and I freeze and I get so nervous. And I totally get it. I've been there. But what they're missing is the fact that if they just smiled and relaxed and did the three moves they knew, the follow probably wouldn't mind that much. Like, it's not like the follow is going to run back and be like, oh my God, I want to dance with this person again. But it's not like they would have had a negative experience. But if you're a lead and you're going to have like tension in your hands and you're sweating and you're looking around because you're so worried that you don't know what you're doing, that kind of creates like a bit of a weird vibe for your partner
It
because
does.
they're like, you're so uncomfortable. You're making me uncomfortable. If you just relax and smile and laugh off your mistakes, that's so much more enjoyable. And so from my perspective, whenever I've danced with followers who are beginners, and sometimes they've done what you've said, it's like they're like, hey, like don't expect much. This is like my first time out dancing. Like, hey, like no worries, let's have fun. And so we'll start dancing, and there's two things that happen. There's either someone who's just like super nervous and is like squeezing your hands and is just like obviously not having a very good time. It
Right.
just like looks like they're a deer in the headlights. Or they're one of the people that are just like, hey, I don't really know what I'm doing, but I'm gonna have fun. And they're smiling and they're laughing and you make a mistake and you just enjoy it. And it's like, I much prefer that beginner who's not so stressed out because it's more fun for me, even if we're doing the same things. So that goes to the energy and the connection you're creating with your partner is if you're feeling super insecure and super tense, all of those negative feelings that are not very fun for you also get transferred to your partner. So I know it's not so easy to just like flick off that switch, but just to know as a beginner, if you're dancing through a song and all you're saying is sorry and you're looking scared and upset, it's not going to be a great experience for either of you. So forget the sorries, forget about apologizing for your mistakes. Like you said, laugh it off, tell them, hey, look, this is probably not going to be very good, but let's give it a go. And just like have as much fun as you can in that moment with that person. And that's it, because that's all we're there to do is just like enjoy a song, try and have fun. We're not there to win a world championship. Like, that's not what a social is about.
What is your pet peeve or pet peeves when it comes to follows? Because I think that's also helpful, right? This is not to just get that information out there and make anybody feel bad about that. But I think it's about learning process, right? Because I think it's the information feedback exchange. I think we kind of address some things with leads, and then I'm sure the follows can benefit from hearing that as well.
Yeah, I feel like so beyond what I just mentioned of just like, hey, relax, this is trying to enjoy, I'm not judging you, let's just have fun. Is follows who are dancing with you and they visually and obviously look bored and are looking around for someone better than you. Those follows make me really angry. Even more angry than a follow that tries to lead me and rip my arm off. Like those follows, I just like let go of and let them shine on their own just to protect myself. But yeah, if you can't give the person the time of day that you're dancing with, if they ask you to dance, just say no. Like don't drag them through the mud and be like, oh, I said yes, but like I'm really too good for you. Like that is a terrible experience for anyone to have. And you know what's interesting is this might be a cultural thing because I've heard about this happening in North America. I don't know if it happens in Europe. I haven't really danced in Europe, but I've been living in Latin America for a while, in Colombia for like the last 5 years. I've never seen this happen in Colombia. Like
Not once.
Latinos are it's never happened to me. I don't know if it's
Wow.
happened to other people, but Latinos are much more about enjoying the moment, enjoying the connection with someone. And this might come from the fact that they've grown up with not all Latinos, but a lot of Latinos have grown up in a culture of salsa, especially if they're
Right.
closer to the Caribbean.
Right.
And so they've grown up dancing with their aunt, their uncle, their family, and they just do the basic step. And they're not expecting anything. They're just having fun and enjoying the music. They love the music.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter who they're dancing with, they can have fun. And so you never see someone like looking around and be like, oh, who's got better turn patterns? Like those follows are missing the point. And it's very sad that that happens. And on forums, you always hear about it happening in the United States. I mean, it happens in Canada as well. I'm from Canada. But I've never seen that happen in Latin America. So I'd really encourage people to just enjoy the moment, enjoy the connection you can have with another human being. Stop judging people. It's not about being the best, it's about having fun. So that's my biggest pet peeve, I think, for follows.
As you were talking, I was laughing because I had a situation that happened to me recently. I think it was last month, actually. I think I want to share it just because it's hilarious.
Please, yeah.
So there was a lady that I approached, and she, to begin with, she had like a blank facial expression, you know, just like emotionless. It's like nothing was there. So I was like, well, you know what? Let me see. Maybe it's just, let me just dance and see if I can sprinkle my magic. So I asked her to dance. And that was one of the situations where things went from bad to worse. Because, so it's not only she looked indifferent, she started looking sad. And it was a feeling as if like she lost her dog, right? And she was mourning. She was in mourning,
okay.
Right? So I'm like smiling, you know, the whole time. I'm like trying to like bring her, engage her into the dance. And she was doing exactly what you were saying. She would look around. And then she would look sad. And I'm like, well, don't. And then after the dance, I'm like thinking to myself, why are you dragging me into your misery?
Yeah.
Like, if you don't want to be there, why did you, to your point, why did you even say yes to me, to dance with me?
100%,
like, because I need a couple minutes to recover. I'm like, all right.
you have to go back to your corner and mourn the dance.
Yeah.
It just happened.
Yeah.
You know what?
Like,
I wish I knew what was going on in their minds, because like, again, like you never know what's happening with someone. Like you never know if they're injured or if something happened or whatever. But yeah, I feel like if you're really not going to enjoy the dance, like don't accept the dance. Yeah, I 100% agree with you. Because like, it sounded like you're really trying to bring your best, your A game and your best energy to someone who just wasn't really open or interested in experiencing it.
No.
Which, I mean, if you
but
say
you
yes,
know what?
It should be for that reason.
Yeah, but you know why? The reason I laugh so hard is because it reminded me like one of those Saturday night skits. You know, when one person like, hey, another person is just like, you know, it's just like literally was
yeah,
one
yeah,
of
yeah.
those, right? And yeah, I'm 100% in agreement with you. I mean, I would not ever judge anybody's personal experience if somebody's going through a situation. But I think it's an odd thing when you now kind of, I don't want to say dragging other person into it, but you're not, you are affecting, you know, the dance experience because of that, right? So I think it's understandable that things, that people are going through a lot of things, but you know, I guess the question is, should you be dancing with somebody and relating or transferring that energy? So that's kind of an odd dynamic there, you know?
Yeah, and I think you can just take that as a general principle for life or whatever you're doing, whether you're talking to someone, whether it's your partner, whether you're at your work, whether you're at a social, it's just like, hey, if I'm not gonna make this person's experience more positive, then maybe I should just not engage with this person. I mean, there's gonna be times in life where you kind of have to do it, but a social is not one of them.
No.
Like, you can be very selective of who you share your energy with. And yeah, I mean, don't be spreading bad vibes. Like, just try and make everyone's day a little bit better than how they arrived.
Exactly.
I think it goes a long way.
Exactly. Yeah, in the same token, I don't think it's about smiling and being, you know, super giggly the whole time or anything like that. It's just the energy exchange, right? As long as another person can feel that you're present, because presence is my big pet peeve. I think it's a very similar thing that what you were describing a moment ago. You know, backleading isn't good. It doesn't feel good, but I think it is worse when person is just not there mentally, you know? And so, you know, I think there's only so many chances that we get to dance with someone, because I'm sure ladies probably feel the same. If they have two bad experiences or average experience with a guy on the dance floor, maybe they're not going to be so open to dance with that person next time. I don't think it's different with us. Like right now, if I saw that lady at the social, you know, I would think twice to dance with her, because there might be somebody else that I can have good experience in dance with, right?
Yeah. And in terms of pet peeves, I've talked with enough follows, and I have a lot of empathy for the follows, because I mean, there's a lead and there's a follow, but like the lead is also following the follow. Like you have to receive signals from them, understand their body language, understand like what are you feeling in response, like to your suggestions. Are they receiving them? Are they understanding them? And you have to adjust to their level, to their style and whatnot. And so it's like back and forth. It's not just as simple as lead and follow. But specifically as a follow, I feel bad because let's say most of the control of the dance is in the lead's hands. And when you get a lead that is not very empathetic or not paying very much attention to how you're feeling as a follow and how you're reacting, I feel really bad for follows that get stuck in dances like that, because they're getting their arms yanked, or they're getting in positions they don't feel comfortable in, or you know, the lead is just too rough, or the lead is forcing them through things, or the follow didn't understand something and lead is doing it again and then again, and then maybe starts to try and teach them on the dance floor and patronize them. It's just like, I didn't ask for this. Like, can we just like have a dance, you know? Can we maybe just figure out what works between us and play within that little sandbox? So I followed a little bit, but I haven't had that many negative experiences, because I'd usually follow, like I'll dance with a friend who's a lead. But yeah, I really feel and have a lot of empathy for follows, because I think they take a lot of crap on the dance floor. And I think it's important for us leads to really be mindful that we want to give good experiences to the follows and try and connect with them and dance with them in a way that they're comfortable with, makes them feel safe, and allows them to have fun with their skill level and style, assuming we're able to adapt a little bit.
100%. I think it starts with us. I think we set the stage for a good dance, you know, and the safety comes first. It's a big component of it all. But connection is definitely something that leads can initiate, I feel like. Being just positive to begin with, smiling, keeping a good eye contact, being playful. I think there's being playful is an element that I sometimes don't see on the dance floor. And obviously I don't go like to socials everywhere in the United States, or I haven't been outside of the country. So my experience is still sort of limited, but I do go to quite a few socials here in Orlando, and it does feel sometimes like robotic, you know, moves. And when you see connection, you recognize it on the dance floor. These two are having a lot of fun. These two are being playful on the dance floor, and it's a different experience. It's a beautiful thing to watch, you know?
Yeah, I really agree. I think playfulness is so important, not just in dance, but just in life, just being curious, be willing to have fun, make mistakes, you know, like try something that you don't know if it's going to work. I'm not saying like a complicated move, but just something like, oh, I don't know if she's going to understand this, but let's, you know, let's toss it in and see how it goes. If it doesn't go well, you just laugh it off together. And I think one of the hard things that can be tricky about play is that it can take practice. And without a certain level of confidence in what you're doing, especially as a beginner, you're like, well, how do I play? Like, I don't even know how to do a crossbody lead and get her to the other side. So it's going to take some experience, I think. And it's also probably a personality side as well. If you're not a very playful person already, it's going to feel probably unnatural to try and add that into your dancing. But I would encourage everyone who feels pulled and enjoys play to like toss it in any way you can. You're not going to find an online course about how to be a playful dancer, I don't think. But I think you can just take cues from what feels good to you in life. And when you see other people being playful, like, oh, what made that playful? What made that joyful? What made that person smile? How can I trick someone or surprise them? Or, you know what I mean? Whatever that might be.
Yeah, and those could be little things, right? A certain movement of the head, or some shimmies, or, you know, it doesn't have to be anything crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember this one guy, his name is Chris. He's super tall, funny guy. He emceed a lot of the congresses in Vancouver, Canada, actually. And we did like a cha-cha workshop with him one time. And he was like, just have fun. Like, he was a joker. And he's like, when you let go and you're doing a turn, just open your arms and be an airplane. Like, just do weird shit, just like for no reason. He's like, don't worry about what people think. Like, you'll get a laugh. And so I think it's just about taking ourselves a little bit less seriously and not being so worried about what might happen or what might people think, and just giving yourself the space to do that and play with something new.
It does change the entire experience, because then it can become just a really fun and engaging experience, and you don't think as much, like the pressure kind of is off at that point, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I just saw a comment down there. I haven't been reading the comments, but it said playfulness removes the pressure on being perfect. I love that. Completely agree. It's like, we're just here to have fun. And so as soon as someone does something a little bit playful or a little bit out of the, let's call it the playbook of the turn patterns and everything that's super expected, especially in, I think, North America, where we can be a bit robotic sometimes, it just is like, oh, I have permission to have fun as well as the partner that's on the receiving end. So I think that's super key. It's like an
Yeah, it's
icebreaker,
the best.
like you said.
Yeah, for sure. I know you mentioned creating a system and follow up, masters, experts that already have some results in Salsa. Anything else that you would do differently if you were getting started right now in your Salsa journey?
Oh, absolutely. So I would take everything I know right now and then just start doing it right from the beginning. So what would I do? If I was a new salsa dancer and I was taking salsa classes, I decided that, hey, I really like this salsa thing. Pretty much like what happens to all beginners. They're like, they become addicted. They're like, oh, I love salsa. And then they start listening to pop music. They're like, start dancing salsa to pop music. Whatever song comes on, they just start dancing salsa. I think it's so funny. So as soon as you've decided that, hey, I like this salsa thing, I want to get better at it, I would say find the best teachers you can wherever you live, if there are teachers around, and do in-person classes, because then you get the nice social aspect of having other humans to dance and interact with. You can try different partners because every partner is different. If you're always dancing with the same partner, something might work with them, but it might not work with someone else because everyone moves a bit differently. They lead and follow differently. So you need to understand how to adjust. So yeah, go to classes, enjoy the social aspect. Of course, find the best teacher you can. But then what I'd also highly recommend to everyone is find an online program that could help you improve in between those classes. Because a lot of people are like, oh, online programs, like, no fun. Clay classes are more fun. Maybe they're more fun, but in terms of like the information and the tools you need to get better, online programs can give you a lot of things that you cannot get in person. So I have never been to an in-person class where the teacher has said, you are here and we're going to take you here and this is how you're going to get there. Whereas if I log into Dance Dojo, I can be like, okay, here's partner work lesson one and here's the last lesson. And you can see the progression. You can see all the moves. You can see all the names. And that is so helpful with creating a mental model and like a path to get there. And then I can say, oh, as you're learning this in your partner work, hey, you should also be learning body movement. So that's another thing I'd say. Learn body movement right from the start. A lot of people just want to learn moves right away, which I understand, and I don't know if that's going to change, but I would say if you're a beginner, start learning body movement as early as possible because it takes time to get into your body, but it is the most rewarding feeling that you'll ever have as a dancer is to start being able to move and coordinate your body and control your body and start connecting with the music. Because you can do that alone, you can do that with a beginner, you can do that with an advanced partner. It has nothing to do with your partner, it has everything to do with you. So you have all that control. And then once you have your body movement and you can control your body, then you can start adding that layer of musicality, understanding the music and expressing your body to the music, which is impossible to do if you've never practiced body movement. You could memorize a song, know all the horn hits, and then just be useless. Like maybe you can go like this with your hand, but like it's not gonna look like salsa, you know what I mean? So I would say learn salsa body movement right from the beginning. Do in-person classes, combine them with online classes because they both have pros and cons, strengths, and try and have fun. Push your limits and get out and social dance. There's a lot of people that I've talked to that just start learning and do privates, and they've done privates, 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 and I'm like, so are you social dancing? I'm like, no. I'm like, you're going to go out, you can successfully do it with the professional teacher you're dancing with. You're going to go out, you're going to go to social, you're going to dance with the average dancer, and you're going to fail at all of the moves because you have no idea how to adjust them to someone who isn't a professional. So yeah, body movement early, online and offline classes, get out social dancing, and try and enjoy the journey. Find friends along the way, find a variety of dance partners who want to meet up and practice. I'd say that's it. And like we have already covered, model a master. So find someone who has the results you want. There's a big variety in terms of teachers. There's not so good teachers and there's very good teachers. So you want to find the very good ones.
Richard asked a question. Any tips for giving a much more advanced follow a fun dance as a less experienced lead?
I think I'd go back to things like that you've mentioned already in terms of connection. So when you're going out social dancing, you're not going to be able to pull a rabbit out of your sleeve and do something that you've probably never done before, mm-hmm. unless you're at a very high level and something just kind of happens, you know? Mm-hmm. So don't put the pressure on yourself to be like, I have to be more than who I am. Just be like, no, I'm Robin. I'm here tonight. I'm going to smile and give my best energy to my partner and we're going to try and have fun. But I'm not going to try and do stuff that I don't know how to do. Because if you start trying to do like moves that you don't know how to do, it's going to start feeling awkward and uncomfortable to your partner. They're going to realize it. It's not going to impress them. Most partners don't want to be impressed. They just want to have fun and feel connected, like you've mentioned a bunch of times before. So I think it's important, especially as a lead. I'm not sure if that comment came. It came from a lead, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as a lead, I think it's important to understand what follows want. And I've talked to enough follows to understand that they don't want a million different turns as fast as you can turn them. They want to feel safe. They want to feel like you're connecting with them and you're sharing a nice energy, be playful. And that's it. Like you can go through a whole dance and just do basics. I've done it in Colombia with lots of people and they have fun. So it's about not going beyond who you are and not trying to impress people. I think it's just about accepting your level and having fun with that. And I think the advanced dancer having the experience that they have is going to understand that you're not going to be able to do complex turn patterns. And I don't think that's going to matter to them.
Agreed. But I think that we'll appreciate your authenticity and they will appreciate if you make it about them. You know, if they will feel that you are there with them in the moment, then you taking care of their safety, you are giving them appropriate heads up. So you're doing the appropriate prep. You not taking any, you know, crazy chances, right? That will compromise safety, but you are being yourself and you're really putting them first. I think that's going to be a successful dance. And that's exactly, for the most part, that's what happened with me last summer when I was just getting out on the dance floor for the first time at the Congress. Yeah. You know, I was way over my head. I was dancing with people who've been dancing for years. And I was really amazed by the level of some of these dancers. And they still dance with me. And some of them, you know, they had a good experience based on just the energy exchange that we've had. So yeah. It's not always about moves. It's really about creating that bond on the dance floor within that short period of time.
I couldn't agree more. I think the fastest way to get a partner to want to dance with you again is not the moves. It's just, did they have a pleasant experience with you? And also, I think another thing that helps in a lot of cases is, do they see you putting in effort and improving slowly? Because there's some people who just never improve, which is not wrong. But if they see you really putting in effort and getting better and really just giving your best energy to everyone, people love to see that. So,
yeah. And then the other thing too, you know, a very advanced follow, they probably practice a lot and they probably do a lot of turns. And if they're on the dance team or any other endeavors, you know, they're already doing a bunch of advanced things all the time. The assumption is, because I'm assuming they don't get to be an advanced level by not training in advanced curriculum, you know. And so, you know, do you want to be, and then, you know, I don't know if you would agree, but I've seen some advanced dancers, again, that looks robotic. It's like move after move after move, move after move after move, move after move. And maybe they connect on the different, in a different way. I don't know. I don't, because I don't dance at that level. So it's hard for me to say whether or not the connection truly occurs when you're doing 100,000 turns over and over and over and over again, right?
Yeah.
But I do know that there's something happening when, even as a beginner, right? When you have that eye contact, when you do that smile, when you give her that turn with some funky thing that maybe she never seen before, when you come to her at the angle maybe that she doesn't expect you to come at her. So all these subtle things, they create a sort of a different feel. And then you can, I think, you can judge based on the feedback, immediate feedback. If she's smiling, is her body language is open towards you? Is she laughing? If she's laughing, it's great, right? Mm-hmm. Because I also think, you know, I think for guys, for leads, it could be misinterpreted. As a lead, you may be thinking, okay, what am I, a clown? What am I there to make somebody laugh? No, it's, you know, if somebody is laughing, that could be a sign of relaxation. That could mean you put somebody at ease, not because you're funny, right? Mm-hmm. So there are subtle things like that that's really interesting, that goes beyond, that gives you a chance. I mean, even if you don't have the skills, I think. And that's a special thing that people can do on the dance floor that sometimes may be overlooked.
100%. And I wanted to comment on one thing that you mentioned, because you were talking about advanced dancers. And so everyone listening, beginner, intermediate, advanced, these are just arbitrary names given to skill levels that don't really exist, that are created for schools so they can somehow categorize you into a system that allows them to organize the school. So I think the easiest way, maybe if you've ever played a video game and chosen your hero, and you know they have all those different skills with the bars, and you can say, oh, this person has more agility, this person has more musicality, this person has more turn patterns. It's like we all have our different levels of different skills. And so someone might be super advanced at being able to do like turn technique, but then they have no musicality whatsoever and no heart and no soul. And that's just a weakness of theirs. And so I think if you think of yourself as one of those video game heroes, salsa dancing version, you can like self-analyze and be like, hey, what are my strengths? What am I good at right now? You know, is my lead and follow technique good? And if so, like, where's my musicality at? Is it down here? Where's my body movement at? Oh, maybe I should bump those up to start becoming a more complete dancer, because there's maturity for each one of these skills. If you just say someone's advanced dancer, it's like, what does that mean? I can imagine what I think it means in my head, but every advanced dancer is going to look significantly different, and everybody's definition of that is going to be quite different. So I think the most important thing is to understand and try and be self-aware of where your skills are at and what your strengths and weaknesses are, and then work on those weaknesses. If that's what's going to make you feel better as a dancer, or like, you know, whatever your goals are, because a lot of people, for example, don't want to compete or perform. So whatever is going to help you reach your goals, you know, if it's just as a social dancer, do you want to be super musical? Well, then make sure you're working on your body movement and musicality. And maybe you can't do the most complex salsa turn patterns, but you're super fun because you know every song and you're having a blast with it, and your partner could see that.
Yeah. And that's another important point that you brought up too, because goals may be not being discussed as much. You know, how many people realistically share, not share, but actually have a clearly defined goals when they starting their journey? Because
very few.
The approach will be different. So if I am a person, for instance, who just wants to learn in order for me to dance socially, so I just need to know, you know, some foundational things so I can get on the dance floor and have a good time. Well, the approach probably would be different from someone who really wants to go, you know, master the dance and do performances eventually, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, somebody who's wanting to get on the dance floor right away, some of these, a lot of things that we talked about today will apply. You know, you have those few things under your belt and you're able to stick to the script on the dance floor, I think you already can do it. And then, you know, if you want to be a solo dancer, right? And if you want to compete, that's going to be a whole different ball game, right? Maybe the social dancing is not going to be even that important for you. It's all going to be about body movement. It's about footwork, shines, you know, mm-hmm. and all type of thing, all those type of things. Because I've seen there are a few people on Instagram that I follow that like phenomenal, but I think they're solo dancers. I never seen them dance with a partner. They're like world champions, but that's all they do. They dance by themselves. And it looks incredible, but like, again, what's the end goal, you know?
Yeah, I mean, just be honest with yourself and what motivates you. For example, like, I love social dancing, always have. I'm not as interested in choreographies. Maybe that'll change at some point, but I think that was the same even when I was breakdancing. I just loved just the rawness of the improvisation as opposed to the choreography side. But both things can strengthen your skills just depending on what you're trying to work on. So, yeah. Just do what makes you feel great and what interests you.
So you mentioned earlier about the curriculum on the website, the Dance Dojo, and you also made a mention of the new ladies program that you're developing. What else, if some of the ladies are interested to join that program online, what else they can expect from that new program?
Yeah, great question. Actually, I think I saw Francelle in here. She said she's in there trying the program right now. So, hi, Francelle. Thanks for the shout out there. So what can everyone expect from the program? So right now, we're launching it in about 2 weeks. I think it's October 25th. So if you want more information about that, if you go to thedancedojo.com, you'll see a lady styling link in the top of the website. So you can click there and sign up to get notified, and I'll send you more information about it. But here's the quick notes on it. So it's going to be a three-part or three-phase program, however you want to think about it. So this comes with how I've talked to Patrick and Scarlett about the development of the skill. So what does it take to create good lady styling, and what does lady styling even mean? Because some people, I've done a survey recently, and it's clear that some people have different definitions of it. So the way that we like to define salsa lady styling at the Dance Dojo and working with Patrick and Scarlett is salsa or lady styling is an extension of your body movement. And so when I say body movement, I'm talking about the grounded, coordinated movements between your upper and lower body that are the foundation of salsa, right? So your steps, your weight shifts, how that moves up your body, moves your torso, which moves your arms and your shoulders. So that is your body movement. And so that is not lady styling. That is the same for males and females. Now, lady styling, is going to go on top of that? It's going to embellish those movements. It's going to accentuate those movements. It's going to extend those movements. So we're talking about, and this is not going to look pretty, we're talking about fingers. We're talking about wrists. We're talking about arm movements. How do you do that? How do you do it with good technique? How do you make it look graceful, fluid, elegant? We mentioned the head a little bit. We mentioned the hips a little bit. But as most of you know, a lot of it is arms and using your body movement and then extending that into your arms to show off more, because your arms are nice and long and you can be big, you can be small, and there's a lot of contrast you can play with. So that is how we would define lady styling. So part one of the program is the body movement module, which is actually the same as we have in our salsa course, because it's the foundation. So you're going to learn how to create those natural grounded movements, first of all, coordinate your body so everything looks good, gives you a nice, we call it the cake, because lady styling is the icing on the cake. So you want to bake a nice cake first and then put the delicious icing on top. That's the lady styling. So then step two is the solo technique for lady styling. Because again, as soon as you start doing things with a partner, it gets more complex, it gets more difficult. So we're stripping out all the complexity, build the foundation, add the solo technique. So that's going to be drills for your fingers, wrists, arms, some hips, some head. We'll also give you some warm-ups and isolations to help you continue working on that body movement as you go into lady styling. And then at the end of the part two, we give you some short lady styling sequences to do with shine, so you can just practice it and bring it together. Yes, that's choreography, but hey, it's fun to practice. And then part three, I think where I'm most excited about, I think Scarlett is probably most excited about this as well, because this has been the number one thing that every follow has written in and asked for. It's like, I've taken lady styling classes at congresses, at studios, nobody teaches us how to do this in partner work. So part three is lady styling for partner work, how to integrate it into your social dancing. So we're going to take all the moves that we talk about, all the most common social dancing moves that we cover in our salsa curriculum. So that's going to be, basic right and left turn, your cross body leads, your traveling turns, inside outside turns, the different variations of those turns, the 360, copas, checks. We're going to take all those, and then we're going to give you 2 to 4 styling options that you can use with each one. And so bit by bit, you're going to start seeing the patterns of how do I start finding the opportunities to style? How do I not hit my partner in the face? What are the principles that start repeating so that I understand, oh, here's the opportunity to use my right arm because the lead is holding my left arm. Oh, when the lead's holding my shoulders, this is how I can style. If the lead is holding my hips, this is how I can style. When I'm facing this direction, this is how I can style so I don't hit the lead in the face. And so I'm really excited to present that because I think a lot of the focus as the level starts going up in studios is to start performing and competing, and it starts going away from social dancing. So even if you start learning how to style really beautifully, you're losing that application on how to apply it in your social dancing. So that's it. It's going to be body movement, lady styling for solos, that technique, and then how to apply everything to social dancing. So super excited about that, and it's launching October 25th.
That's a great info.
Thanks for allowing me to share that.
Yeah, of course, of course. And you currently have a free trial, right, that people can go in and do?
We have a free trial. The lady styling is not included because it doesn't exist
Okay.
yet. But you can try the salsa course and the bachata course. You get 100% full access to everything for 7 days. So you can dive in as deep as you want. We don't ask for your credit card. We don't charge you. You don't need to cancel it. You just go in and learn as much as you want for a week, and you get to decide if this is helpful for you or not, and then
Yeah.
if you want to join or not.
So this is still a great opportunity for people to test drive the concept itself and just to see, if that's something that they would like to commit to later on.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of people have never tried learning online, or they have a lot of doubts. It's like, how do I learn how to dance online? It's just a screen. So this allows people to just try it and see for themselves.
Absolutely. Man, we've covered a lot of ground, Robin. This was a very fun
We have.
conversation. Yeah,
Yeah, I
it was
appreciate it.
great. Yeah, any closing thoughts of on anything that we didn't touch on?
Closing thoughts. Oh, we've talked about a lot of things. Know if anything's popping into my head here. Not.
Well, I'll just say this to everyone who joined live. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to join our conversation. And to everyone who will be watching this and recording, if you have some comments, please leave your comments. If you would like to see some other live talks on specific topics, please let us know. I mean, this definitely was a very interesting conversation. Would like to get your thoughts on what else would be useful for you guys to know. Yeah, this was awesome, man. This was awesome.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Yuri. Really appreciate the conversation. I don't get to have many of these conversations because I don't think there's that many people. I mean, there's a lot of people posting about salsa, but there's not a lot of people having these discussions. So I think it's super rich. Really enjoyed it. And just to mirror what you said, everyone who's watching, if there's other things you want to learn, Yuri would love to know. I would love to know. It helps us create things that are interesting for you because we're always inside of our own heads, and that gets boring after a while. So it's a lot more fun, just like having a social dance, to have a social conversation. So let us know what you think and whatever you're interested in. I'm sure both of us would love to talk more about it. So thanks for everyone who's been watching.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot to salsa. So we can probably talk about things. I know I can probably talk about it all day because we didn't talk about musicality. Music itself is a whole different thing. Fashion behind it is a different thing. We talk a little bit about psychology and experiences on the dance floor, but there's like, I feel like it's just unlimited. It's like an ocean, So
Absolutely.
yeah.
Well, we'll have another conversation, hopefully not too long from now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been great. Thank you so much, Robin.
Cool. All
Have a
right.
great one.
Take care.
Later.
All right. Bye, everyone.